You know, one of the things I enjoy doing a lot is talking with authors about their books, and I particularly enjoy talking with the author of a book set in Wisconsin, or maybe the author is from Wisconsin or lives in Wisconsin, and sometimes it's both, and that's that makes it special for me for sure. And our next guest today, Victoria Houston, her books are set in Wisconsin, and she lives in Wisconsin. So it's nice to have both of those, that combination. And Victoria Houston's been with us many times on the show. She's the author of 19 books in the Loon Lake Mysteries, now rebranded as the Lou Ferris Mysteries, and her latest is titled Hidden in the Pines. So are you a fan of Victoria's books? What questions do you have about the characters? Maybe you have a character, a favorite character you'd like to ask her about. I want to have you part of the conversation, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us. Email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Victoria Houston, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Well, good morning, Larry. Great to be here.
Tell you what, I finished your book, actually a couple, it's one of those books that your books, as soon as I get them, then I want to sit down and read them right away, which I did. So it's been a few weeks.
Great.
It's been a few weeks, but I haven't forgotten it for sure. But I wanted to, just to start with, let's talk about the switch from the Loon Lake Mysteries to Lou Ferris Mysteries being featured. What was the cause of that?
Well, it goes back to the fact that I've worked probably for about 15, 16 years with a guy there in Madison. His name is Ben Leroy. And Ben and I started working together after my sixth book in the series. And at that time, I was published by Berkeley. And this gets into a little of the book publishing dynamics. Berkeley decided to really focus their mysteries on cooking or, carving gourds, that kind of thing. And I had run into Ben at a writer's conference, and he said he was starting a publishing house. And to make a long story short, he took me on as one of his early authors. Now, over time, Ben has started two different publishing businesses, and every time he got bought by a big conglomerate. So the most recent one before this change was when his company was bought by Simon & Schuster. So at a point about 2 years ago, I was being published by Simon & Schuster. Every title started with the word dead. And then Ben calls me up and tells me he's with a new company called Crooked Lane Books, and he wants to publish me. So we know we want to continue the series, but with Ben being with Crooked Lane, they wanted the change. They didn't want dead in the titles, which was fine with me. I'd kind of run out of
lures,
dead things. And and they wanted to have the female character, Lou Ferris, be the main character. And when we say the main character, what that means to me is the primary point of view in the story is going to be her point of view. And so that's where the change came. New publishing partner, and then their desire to make that change. And I was totally comfortable with it because Lou has always been one of the top three characters. And over time, I had found, as I was working on the stories, that I would often change the point of view from Doc Osborne to Lou or to the other main character, Ray Pratt.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question pretty well?
It has. Well, how have readers responded to this?
They've been very happy with it. And I'll tell you, I think that has to do with the quirky thing again in the publishing business. When you look at mysteries, 80% of mystery readers in the country are female. And I'm unusual. I get a 50-50 readership because of the fishing background in my books.
Yeah.
And so I would say that, you know, women enjoy reading mysteries with a female main character. And I sure haven't had anybody complain. And I would let you know if I did. But no, I haven't had any complaints. And the key person in all this is really me. How do I feel about it?
Yeah.
And I'm very comfortable with it. I've grown over my 20 years of working on this series. And it's all the same characters now, even though it's called the Lou Ferris Mystery. But I've gotten to know those characters like they're family members. And so whereas maybe when I started out, I was a little more comfortable from the point of view of Doc Osborne, because he's distilled from memories of my father and my grandfather and my uncle, all of whom were, you know, dentists, and all of whom had second marriages that were awful. And so moving along with Lou, I got to know her better over the years. I'm very comfortable writing from her point of view.
And you've got 19 books in the series. Somebody's wondering here if all of your books are still available.
They are. Now, I have to correct you on one thing. I actually have 21 books. And Hidden in the Pines is the second one with Crooked Lane.
I got it. Okay.
Yeah. And then I just finished the third, so we'll see how that goes. But those books are very easy to get. Quite a few of the books from Simon & Schuster, technically, they are all in print. But there are several that I think they do print on demand for some of those. But I noticed that the early books in the series, Dead Angler, Dead Creek, those are continuing to move pretty nicely. So my short answer is yes, they're all in print. Yeah. And of course, today you're looking at print, or you're looking at Kindle, and you're looking at audiobooks. So.
And they're all available.
All available. Yeah.
Victoria Houston, our guest today. We haven't even started really to talk about her book, her latest in the series, which is titled Hidden in the Pines. You know, you mentioned the three primary people in the book, in your books. Be worth it, I think, just to give a thumbnail of the locations and those main characters again.
Well, first of all, Loon Lake, I think of as sort of Brigadoon. It kind of hovers over Rhinelander, Eagle River, Minocqua. It's definitely to the east of Park Falls, and it's west of Goodman. That gives you a good idea. And it's a town of about 3,500 people, and it's right in the middle of lake country. And when I say lake country, this area up here has a higher ratio of water to land than anywhere in the world. So it's really interesting. We always compete with an area in Russia, but we have more water. And then my three main characters, those are really distilled from memory of people from my childhood. And I like to quote Willa Cather, who's one of my favorite writers, and who said, writers write from the memories they have from before the age of 15. And so Doc Osborne is distilled from my dad, my grandfather, my uncle, all dentists. And then Lou Ferris is distilled from memories of two girls that were in my neighborhood when I was growing up, and they were about 4 years older, and they used to beat me up all the time. And I was on your show a couple years ago, and I mentioned that one of them, when she grew up, she became chancellor of the University of Minnesota in Duluth, and I said she's still beating people up.
Well, I tell you what, we're going to take a quick break. Victoria, and then we'll be back. Victoria Houston, our guest, the title of her latest book is Hidden in the Pines, and she'll be back to talk about more about writing and her book right after this look at the news. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, having some fun talking with Victoria Houston about, well, we talked a little bit about the publishing process, and we're talking with her as well about her latest book in the now called the Lou Ferris Mystery Series. This one's titled Hidden in the Pines, and there's a lot going on in the book. And we'll talk with her about that. We'll talk with her about writing, maybe a little more about publishing, and certainly give you a chance to join in with your own thoughts and comments. Have you read Victoria's stories and books? I hope you'll join in. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Victoria, right when we broke for news, you were talking about Lou Ferris and Doc Osborne as two of the three main characters, the other Ray Pratt,
who yes.
kind of my favorite in some ways.
Oh, a lot of people love Ray. Well, let me say one last thing about Lou Ferris. She also is distilled, aside from the girls who used to beat me up when I was a kid, she's also distilled from a memory of a favorite high school teacher, a woman who was very kind of authoritative. But the funny thing was, she was a fanatic fisherman. And if you look back into the 60s, you don't see that many women out there probably at midnight on opening night of fishing like that woman was. But yeah, Ray Pratt, your favorite, is in the books. He's a 32-year-old fishing guide, and he really focuses on musky fishing. And he also tells, well, he's very handsome, very good-looking guy. And then he tells really inappropriate jokes. And he is distilled from memories of one of my brothers. I'm the oldest of eight kids, and two of my cousins, guys who are from Stevens Point. And those three always hung out together, fishing, hunting, and, you know, in their late teens, early 20s, this would have been the height of the late 60s. They did a few controlled substances, let's say. And anyway, that's who Ray is. He's a combination of those guys. And I get a kick writing about him, too. And he's good-hearted.
Yeah.
He's very good at what he does fishing-wise. He's very good in the woods. He's excellent at tracking. And again, you know, it is amazing in terms of distilling this from people you know. One of my cousins that I'm talking about is a trapper and is definitely an individual who's, you know, made his career out of being outdoors. And then my brother that I'm talking about, too, ran a bait shop. And he did, in fact, two things. He did, in fact, dig graves when he was short of money, when he was in his early 20s. And years later, some woman who kind of fell in love with him made him a hat that had a stuffed walleye on top. So I haven't had to make up some of that stuff.
Well, Well, this latest story, by the way, you've got Lewis, the county sheriff now. She got promoted.
Yes. Yeah, she won the election. She got elected.
So, well, yeah, of course. And I wondered about that. I think it may give you some opportunities to even almost expand a little bit.
Definitely.
Yeah, I would think so. Because now she's got the whole county as opposed to just the one, and it also takes her away a little bit. It does make her the center of the story for sure.
I liked it. Gives her more authority.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, tell us, probably give us a thumbnail on the story. There's a lot going on in this book. There's old murder. There's new one. Well, go ahead.
Well, I think the important thing is that, there's a individual who retires who grew up in Loon Lake and now is retired, but is still haunted by the death of her sister when she was a child. So she comes back and she decides to go to work for the sheriff's department because she knows it's going to give her access to some police records. So she can begin to kind of figure that out, what really happened to her sister, because her parents lied about it. Well, then sort of parallel to that, Doc Osborne discovers that his oldest daughter, who works in public relations in Chicago, has become involved through old friends with a situation that involves money laundering through art. And so both of these storylines are moving along and about maybe a bit into the story, it's kind of interesting how they cross paths. And I'm not going to say much more than that, because otherwise I'll give away what happens next. But let's just say at the end, the bad guys get caught. And that includes whoever it was that might have been involved with that murder many years ago. So.
Yeah, it's it was interesting to me to see how all those things kind of fold together and fit together at the end.
Well, and I'm going to interrupt for 1 second, say another factor for me working on the book. Years ago, when I was starting my career, I was the art critic for Art News Magazine, which is a national magazine, and for the Kansas City Star. So I was very familiar with contemporary art. And coincident with working on this book, the New York Times has been doing a series of stories on the serious money laundering that's taking place right now with contemporary art. So since I'm a fanatic newspaper reader, gave me a good excuse to hang on, have an extra cup of coffee, read the newspaper, and then work it into my story.
Well, you know, that's for you, that's, and probably for a lot of writers, constantly reading and keep, and those, what you read and what you hear about can become the basis for your books.
Definitely, definitely. And it's surprising, sometimes just in a casual conversation with people, you know, there'll be a good idea will pop up. And, that's what makes it fun to do this.
Well, somebody's always getting killed in your books, pretty much. Why do you think Wisconsin's a great place to set a murder mystery?
Oh, gosh. I think, first of all, we've got the woods and the lakes, so we've got plenty of places for people to hide. And one of the things I like to point out when I'm talking about why fishing backgrounds my stories is that if you're fishing bait fishing, like for muskie or walleye, you're on a boat or you're on a dock. And even with a boat, you can end up, you know, going up a stream in a strange place. You can end up getting caught in bad weather and having things happen. But then if you're fly fishing, you're in the water and you're definitely going up streams and small trout streams in particular. And that's public property. But the minute you step out of that stream, you're on private land. And I like to say, you don't know if the people who live there eat their young or not. So, you know, Wisconsin just provides a lot of wilderness where things can happen. And, you know, I remember when I was a kid, and, you know, this is probably not fair to local people, but I remember my dad, when I was a teenager, he counseled me. If I was on a date with a boy, he said, do not drive down roads with no fire numbers. And his point was, you do not know who lives there, and you do not want to find out. So, kind of grew up haunted. Yeah.
Oh, man. You know, there's this was interesting to me, too, because there is a long chase scene in your book. And I wondered, you know, because there's a lot of different things going on at the same time. Is it difficult to write something like that? You've got something going on it's big, involving a lot of different people.
Not really. It's kind of interesting. When I've talked with other writers, they'll often say the hard part for them in writing a mystery is the middle of the book. And I don't have that problem. I find my sort of intuitive arc in putting a mystery together is the whole first half of the book is setting it up. And then once I reach that midpoint, now it's almost like, regardless of the story, it's still, in a sense, a chase to the end. And so I find that part flows pretty darn easily. I don't have a problem with that. It's sort of funny. Years ago, now I'm going to give away one of my secrets. Years ago, when I was starting to write mysteries, a woman who was a screenwriter in LA read an early attempt and she said, I suggest when you think of your stories that you give yourself a time frame, a short time frame. And so my stories, I don't know if you've ever noticed, but they all take place within a week.
Hmm.
So for me, if I fit, you know, very tangibly have in my head Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and where things are happening, that kind of is a driver for how things are come to an end. And it's just, it makes it easy. So I don't have a problem pulling the pieces together.
Because of the way you're because of the way that you're constructing it sort of over a week. I hadn't noticed. Yeah. I've read all your books and I haven't noticed that.
21 books and you haven't noticed they all take place within a week. That's good. I like hearing that. That's great.
Well, I had another question relating to that. It just slipped out of my mind. What's your favorite part of writing a new book?
How about the last day, the last page? No, all kidding aside, I think early on developing the idea that I'm going to, thinking through what happened, because a murder does open the story generally. Yeah. And then who's involved, and then the effect it's having on my main characters, or what's going on in their lives that might be brought to have an impact on how the story is developing. But I would say that I have 2 points. One is when I feel like I can write a synopsis, a one-page synopsis of the story I'm about to spend 9 months on, and that last page when I feel like I've printed it out and I've got my commas and my periods right, and I feel good about what happened to the people in the story.
Murder mysteries, they're pretty popular, and there are a lot of them published.
Yes.
Every year.
Good escape. Good escape for people.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I have my own criteria too, by the way. I was reading one recently that got great reviews. And in the third chapter, all of a sudden it's from the point of view of the dead person. And that I couldn't deal with. So you're not going to find any dead people talking to you in my books. You're going to be dead.
So what's your advice for somebody trying to get a book published? Email.
I think number one, there's a very good book called The Writer's Market, and it's available online. It's also certainly used to be always available in the library, and it's updated every year. And it really gives people a good idea of how to put together what they have to use to introduce themselves to a publisher or to an agent. And then it has a good list of who are the legitimate agents out there and the types of books that they represent. Because if you want to be traditionally published, you're going to have an agent. And so that is just a good trade book to get started. The second thing I would suggest is there are usually different writers' conferences. Certainly, I think there's one every year in Madison.
Yeah.
And I recommend attending those because usually there's a couple of editors there, maybe an agent, but more than anything, you get to meet other people in the writing business. And it'll help you make a decision. I know that today self-publishing is still a big thing. It's not something I know anything about, but it helps you make a decision which way you want to go.
Yeah. Would you categorize, here's another question from someone, would you categorize your books as cozy mysteries?
Actually, no. Although I got picked up by Berkeley early on because they said, we write cozies. And so, you know, a cozy has no graphic sex on the page, no graphic violence on the page, and no use of the F word. So I said at the time, I said, I don't have that. Now, the book we were talking about, which was my very first one I wrote, happened to be based, murder mystery was based on some water quality issues outside of Green Bay. And maybe I told you about this before. I had those endocrine disruptors are in the waters there and they cause hermaphroditic life forms. And so I had used a hermaphroditic character in my book. And that's where Berkeley said, the marketing team said, no hermaphrodites. So I had to rewrite the story, which I could do because I had just done a nonfiction book with the doctor on hormones. So I knew how I could redo it and still have a health issue. But that was my introduction to cozies. What I would categorize my books as is police procedurals. And then I happen to write books where I don't want those issues. I mean, I don't deal with graphic sex or graphic violence.
Right.
I find that hard to write. So,
yeah. Well, Karen emailed us. She wants to let you know how much she loves her books. Karin's has them all. Her mother introduced her to mystery series, and yours are her favorites. Her mom always looked forward to your next new book, and Karin would always buy two copies, one for her mom and one for herself.
Tell her thank you.
Her mother passed away in October, and she will miss sharing and talking about Lou, Doc, and Ray with her. But she's so grateful that her mom introduced those books to her.
Oh, thank you, Karin. Thank you for sharing that.
I imagine you get a bit of that.
I do. It's one reason I keep doing what I do. It's just I enjoy doing it, and then I like the effect it has on people. And I think, Larry, there's another thing that I try to do that I learned again from another writer a long time ago, which is leave room in the book for the reader. You don't have to wrap everything up perfectly tightly. Leave room for the reader's opinion and for the reader's personal thoughts on their reaction to what has happened.
That's a good piece of advice.
Yeah.
A very good piece of advice. Well, and you know, I was going to ask you how many more you're going to write, but you've already got another one in the ongoing or practically done, huh?
It's done. I just submitted it last week. So now I'll have to wait, and then I'll certainly be making some changes as a result of the editor. I have an excellent editor, and so I'll hear back from her on what needs to be cleaned up a little bit. But as far as new, I'm not sure. And then I also had a email from a television producer. And so we'll see what happens with that. Who knows? You know, life goes on.
Well, I would love to see these characters brought to life in film, for sure.
I would too. Yeah. That'd be fun.
They're old friends, and have kind of gotten to be old friends for me. And I always look forward to finding what's going on with Ray and Lou and Doc Osborne. It's been a real pleasure once again, Victoria, to speak with you. And I hope we have a chance to do it again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry. It's a treat for me. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Victoria Houston, our guest. And the book is titled Hidden in the Pines. Take a look at it. I think you're going to have some fun reading it. And now that you've had a chance to hear what Victoria has had to say, always a pleasure talking with her. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk about how to appreciate Mother's Day, even if you don't have a mother figure in your life right now. And then we'll learn a little bit more about autism as well. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.